This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Don Cinco. Don is the Chief Integrity Officer at Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic, of course, is one of the top health systems in the world, always ranked one or two on U.S. News and World Report. Magnificent. Don holds this fascinating role in his career in compliance, a former Big Four, Big Eight accounting firm, and now Chief Integrity Officer at Cleveland Clinic. Don, take a moment, introduce yourself, and tell us about the role of Chief Integrity Officer.
Sure. The my main responsibilities are over the offices of corporate compliance, business ethics, internal audit, and then on a dotted line basis, I have cybersecurity that reports to me. And really, from a role standpoint, what I like to say, to simplify my responsibilities, it's really to prevent, detect, and resolve problems. And, primarily, non-compliance with policies and procedures, federal, state, and local laws, regulations, and the like, but also, I'll say business ethics type things. So things that it might be legal to do, but is it really the right thing to do? And so it's really focusing on those areas.
Let me ask you a question real quickly. Yeah. A lot of systems have a general counsel. I mean, every system above a certain size. Every system above a certain size has a chief compliance officer. How many systems have a chief integrity officer? And how did it come to be called the chief integrity officer at Cleveland Clinic?
Yeah, so, good question. Because in a lot of organizations, the compliance officer reports through general counsel or is the general counsel. And we don't do that at the clinic. As a matter of fact, the government, if you look at the government examples on what they think are proper compliance, they don't think it should be in the law department because the law department's job is to protect the entity. Whereas, the integrity office is really, are we doing the right thing? And at Cleveland Clinic, what we did, and we set this up about 18 years ago now, that my position as an integrity officer, I report directly to the board of directors. I do not report to the CEO. I don't report to general counsel, totally independent of operations. And it's one of the things I think that, is viewed, very highly from the outside, is that we really function, the way a compliance or integrity office should function, having that independence. And as a result, people within the organization feel comfortable coming to us because they know I don't have to go running to the general counsel or to anybody else with the issues that we're addressing, and that we can keep people anonymous if they choose to be, and we can focus on resolving the problem and not the other. So it's really a great setup the way we have the independence here.
And how is that? I mean, certainly like the attorney is all these privileges that are owed to the organization. And, it has to be right. First of all, it's protecting the organization versus necessarily doing what's right. Although hopefully those overlap a lot in most situations. Talk about how the role has evolved for you there and what sort of evolved and changed over the last couple of years. Then also sort of what are the hottest issues you're looking at? Where do you spend most of your time worrying and concerned and trying to make sure things are going right?
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because how the positions evolved and, what are the top concerns, they kind of go hand in hand. So when you look at compliance officers, in general and internal audit in general, the major focus always used to be billing. We want to make sure we're billing correctly. Obviously we want to make sure we're not overbilling, Medicare or the government or anybody along those lines. And really the focus was, from a billing standpoint. Then about 10 years ago, HIPAA became a big deal. The focus with the HIPAA laws and obviously, protecting patient information, that became a focus point. But then what's happened is you take a look at our job or my job, and it's evolved really ties to how healthcare has been evolving. So if you look at healthcare has been evolving quite a bit the last few years, and we focus basically on the risk. When you look at what do? We have to focus on the values of the organization and the risks of the organization and evolve as they evolve. So for instance, look at healthcare programs today compared to 5 and 10 years ago. Organizations, and obviously including Cleveland Clinic, are branching out into other areas. You got organizations, getting into insurance. They're getting into home health. Obviously, telemedicine has taken off. Things that, were never a focus even 5+ years ago. Another big thing that's changed, is data management. Data used to be basically stay within an organization. It was protected within an organization. And now the last few years, there's a major focus nationally to have data management going outside of your organization, sharing data across health systems, across organizations, obviously providing better patient care if people can easily access the information, but presenting, significant concerns related to protecting that data once it leaves your organization. And then, look what's happened the last 5 years with cybersecurity. Not really a big deal, more than 5 years ago. And now you have healthcare is the number one target of cyber criminals because we have the most valuable information for stealing identities. And that's, patients' names, social security numbers, and date of births. And so now, you look at what's been happening in healthcare with ransoming hospitals and the like. Again, a big change, a big significant part of our programs.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
In cybersecurity, a lot of it can be around getting the right technology and the right practices. In some of the other areas of integrity, how much of is it so critical to set the right overriding culture to an organization in terms of making sure the right things are done versus actually verifying and auditing and so forth, which is so important too. But how much does it all start with having a great culture that we're trying to do the right thing?
Great. Culture is everything. And if you look at what we've done at Cleveland Clinic is, and there's only a handful of hospitals like this in the country, but at Cleveland Clinic, we're a physician-led organization. And all of our doctors are salaried physicians. So, which is a big thing from my perspective and from a government regulation perspective. Being a salaried physician takes away incentives from doing unnecessary procedures because none of the money is going to go to the doc anyway. Same for billing purposes, overbilling or billing for things that they didn't do. There's no incentive to do that when you're getting a salary. And that's one of the big things that's in healthcare. That's a big, big concern is, performing unnecessary procedures, upcoding and things like that, because obviously, the physicians that were to do that, that money goes into their pockets. Well, at Cleveland Clinic, it doesn't. So it sets a culture of, we're supposed to do the right thing for the patient. If they need the procedure, then we need to do it. If they don't need it, then they don't do it. And so you're taking the dollar incentive out of the physician's, decision process on whether they need to do something or not. The other thing that we have from a culture standpoint that I think is significant is, we are truly set up as institutes, which mean, instead of having, medicine and surgery, we have everybody working together in one unit. We talk about how we work as units. And so the cardiologist works with the surgeon and works with nursing and the others as a unit. And again, they're salaried, so it's not impacting their salary or who should get credit for whatever. And it sets the culture that it's what's important. What's the most important thing is what's for the patient's best interest and not for theirs. So I think when you start with that, then everything else starts falling in line from a, complying with laws, regulations, and the like.
Thank you very much. Don, let me ask you another question. Cleveland Clinic also has a serious international footprint. I know between London, I think either the UAE or Saudi Arabia and other places. How does it impact the role of Chief Integrity Officer?
Yes, it has a big impact because, yes, we're in Canada as well. And it impacts it because we have we have a director of international compliance, focusing on international laws and regulations. We have to focus on making sure that we're complying with those countries' regulations. So, for instance, as you mentioned, we're going to be opening a hospital within the year in London. So we have to be up to speed with, at the time, GDPR, and now we have Brexit. So now we not only have GDPR, but now we're going to have what England, you know, comes up with for their privacy laws. So we have to be, aware and compliant with those, as well as their billing regulations. So yes, it adds a lot of complexity to our work. But actually, you know, it's good. I mean, from our perspective, it's good to be involved in those things.
When you work with executives from other parts of the world, how different or the same do you find them to work with versus the executives here?
As far as working with other hospital systems?
With your executives, I know I've worked with Cleveland Clinic London. I've had the CEO on our podcast, brilliant doctor from Cleveland Clinic, Brian Donnelly. I mean, the same culture you have here. When you work with the cultures in the Middle Eastern states, is the compliance concerns, they have different rules, the same rules? Are the executives very attuned to it like we are here? And not that we're so good at it, because, you know, everybody's all over the board here. But do they have are you talking the same language you talked about compliance in some of these different countries?
Interesting question. Because so if you look at what's happened in Abu Dhabi, for instance, you know, when we set up that relationship and they wanted us to come to that country, they wanted the Cleveland Clinic culture at that hospital. So they, you know, the reason, you know, that they wanted us to come in and manage it is because they liked our culture and they wanted our culture. So it was very easy from that standpoint to be able to implement our culture, because that's what one of the focuses and why they wanted us there. And they've been terrific. And actually it's been a very good relationship there. Same with London. And as you mentioned, Brian Donnelly, who's done a great job over there since going over there, but the same kind of thing. I mean, they want the Cleveland Clinic culture in those. So as a result, it's been, it hasn't been a problem. And we've done the work, like we've gone to London and we've, you know, told them about our compliance programs, how we do things to try to set our compliance culture, and they've been very, very open to it. It's not been an issue at all.
Fantastic. And when you go to London, are you able to meet with the Prime Minister, or you don't get that chance to meet with the Prime Minister?
No, I haven't had that chance. I would imagine Brian has.
Either has or will. It's just fascinating. Yeah. What a fascinating. I mean, did you ever think you'd end up in this role? I mean, what a fascinating career that it ended up in Chief Integrity Officer of Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, it's amazing. I tell people when I talk to college students that, you know, the reality is when you come out of college and people say you have a 5-year plan or here's what you're going to do for your career, what I tell them is probably the job you're going to end up with probably hasn't even been created yet. And, I got into this position, like I said, about 18 years ago, and, you know, there was no other position like it. So let alone how can you say this is what I wanted to be someday? So, but it's been unbelievable. The clinic is a phenomenal place. And it's been terrific.
Just magnificent. Brian, what a magnificent career. Just that Brian Donnelly in the mind from there for a second. So we're just talking about him. What a magnificent career. Yeah. What a great job Cleveland Clinic has done. I mean, it's doesn't amaze you sometimes. I don't mean to keep on going. I know I want to let you off the hook in a second. But doesn't it amaze you to see the growth you've seen in Cleveland Clinic and how dominant an organization and how strong an organization it became over the years?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Scott, it's been it's a phenomenal place. And when I was talking to a group earlier this morning, and I said, I don't want to sound like a homer, but I said, I've been around the block. When I was at Ernst & Young, I was in their healthcare practice and audited most of the hospitals in Northeast Ohio, and been, you know, we have a lot of international experience when I was at Eaton Corporation. And I said, this place truly is amazing. And it's physician led. We're run by doctors. They care about patients. You know, that's their focus. I mean, it really is. And the people are just, you know, top class people. They want to do the right thing. The fact that they set up the integrity office 18 years ago, and a lot of that was board driven as well, because we have a phenomenal audit committee. They just do all the right things. And from my perspective, I'll tell you that they have never not followed my guidance on issues when we've had, you know, when we've had issues. And I talk about, I say, here's what I think we should do, whatever, they do it. I've never had anything pushback saying, you know, that even leads to wanting to do the wrong thing.
No, they've really followed the guidance. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. That's why I think, like, from a government standpoint, I think they look at our programs and how we do things. You know, we do it the right way. And, and the other thing is, obviously, as you know, in healthcare, you're always going to have issues and problems. As long as you have people, you're going to have issues and problems. So what they look at is, well, what do you do? You know, are you trying to prevent them? And if you can't prevent them, are you trying to early detect them to minimize problems? And then what do you do to resolve them? And that's the big thing that I keep trying to push with our staff and the people in our organization, is you want to prevent it. If you can't prevent it, you want to detect it early, and then you want to make sure you do the right thing in resolving it. And that, you know, and that's the, you know, and that's their, you know, that's their focus. And it's just a great place from that perspective, you know, from a culture standpoint. I don't know any place that has, you know, in healthcare that has the culture we have.
No, it's remarkable for me to watch Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic as well, a handful of top systems over the years. It's just how they've continued to institute ethics and greatness in everything they do. It's really a magnificent thing to watch. There's a whole host of systems in that category. And of course, Cleveland Clinic's right at the very top. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us again. Go ahead, you were going to say something.
Yep. No, I was just going to say, but you mentioned Mayo Clinic. You know, again, Mayo Clinic has the same physician-led structure that we have. And to me, what I tell people, it's not a coincidence that the top two health systems in the country are the Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic. And we are the two set up with being physician led and not run by business people. And I think
it's fascinating, though, because what's happened is you're entering an era where there's a mix of pushback on that, where you've got some systems viewed as that's elitist, or that's not right that it's physician-led. But you've got some of the best CEOs in the country now that are nurses as well, or business people. And so it's a very fascinating thing as to whether Cleveland Clinic and Mayo Clinic, who have been so good for so long and remain the top two in the U.S. News and World Report every year, are magnificent, whether they'll be able to maintain that for the next 100 years. Just because there's some pushback culturally to that, even though it's worked so well, and a different discussion for a different time, but it's a fascinating point that you make, and it's a huge point of pride. Whenever I talk to a CEO of an individual Cleveland Clinic hospital, it's very much a similar mantra all the way through, and it's served Cleveland Clinic magnificently well. And it's a fascinating time as we move into different cultural times, whether that sustains itself for another 100 years or not, but it certainly is working well, has worked well, and is magnificent. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, the thing that you have to look at, though, is you look at the type of doc that we get and that Mayo Clinic gets. So if the type of doc we're going to get, we're going to get not only a high-end physician from a practice standpoint, but generally there are people who want to do research, they want to teach, you know, they want to give back. If you're a doctor and your goal is to maximize your earnings, you want to make as much money as you can, then it's not the place to be. Because our docs can leave Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic and make more money someplace else.
We had the chance to spend a lot of time with I was Toby Cosgrove at one time, who was a visionary leader and a specialist. And then one time, the former CEO of Mayo Clinic, John Noseworthy, and both were fascinating characters. John was a little more understated than Toby. Toby was the crazily driven and intelligent and high ethics driver of the Cleveland Clinic growth and system. John was sort of a quieter, more taciturn person, but both believed in just really excellence and greatness in every facet of what they did and what their systems did. And both were smart enough to build systems, not just themselves. And so it's worked incredibly well. And I don't mean it as a negative that it's sort of now viewed as culture and anomaly that, because it's a fascinating thing, but it's worked incredibly well. Both systems are magnificent. And it just is, we quite frankly cheer for all these top systems, all of them, and the small systems too, to continue to excel and thrive. Because they're all part of the critical part of our healthcare landscape, taking care of our 30 million people. Yeah. There's a lot of people here. And God bless.
But to your point, a very large percentage of doctors do not want to be a salary doctor. they want to, you know, and we get pushed back because, you know, there's physician practices or there, you know, or there could be a hospital that we, you know, we're looking to, you know, join the system. And the docs, you know, they don't want to be, you know, they want to be able to, you know, to eat what they kill. And so to your point, it's not going to work everywhere, and it's not going to work in a lot of places because they don't want to be, quote unquote, an employee. And
right. But the evolution has changed. You and I are the same vintage. And the doctor sort of era has changed too. From there's still a huge percentage of bastion of independence, and there's a lot that are part of systems that are employed. The whole world has changed so much in the years that you and I have been in the business and in this world.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to watch. It really is. And no, in Cleveland Clinic, and your point is well taken. Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinics, I mean, they end up, people that come to them are drawn to the whole mix of practice, to research, to greatness, to practicing at the very highest level, to intellectual pursuit, as well as just doing procedures. I mean, your point is extremely well taken, of course. I mean, you see this at, like, I see there's an orthopedic group here in Chicago that's affiliated with the Rush University Medical Center, and it's just a different level of, and they are alpha people there, but they're very much also very research-driven, as well as just practice-driven. And it's a different mindset, for sure. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, I've had docs tell me that they love the fact they're working with other, you know, top docs, you know, that everybody they're working with is like a top doc, and they love that environment of, you know, of who
well,
they're
with.
That's
the beauty of continuing to attract more and more of that. It's like when you spend a lot of time with EY, so you attract the brightest of the bright. You're working with very, very bright professionals, very similar, and there's no secret to why the four largest accounting firms remain the four largest accounting firms.
Yes.
You know, and rolled into that because they're attracting really bright people year after year, and people like to work with really bright people that are motivated, that are enthused, that are high integrity, that have great personal and business and intelligence and driven. And it's the same thing in these magnificent clinics like the Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinics, the Mass Generals, and a whole New York Press, a whole host of others, UCLA, that have become so good, and then it becomes a you know, not a flywheel, but you keep on attracting, because great people attract more great people as long as you've got
exactly
a great mindset.
Yeah, I mean, you know, exactly. It's you know, and what a lot of, and I'll tell you, I'm very optimistic about the younger docs. You know, a lot of the docs I meet, you know, the younger docs that are coming up, they're really good people, and they're not only good doctors, but I think that, you know, they come from a different mindset on, you know, the amount of money they make is not as important as their working conditions, who they work with, you know, and all that. And I think, you know, that's going to change some things too, you know, from that perspective of, you know, it's not just how much money.
I mean, there's more, the people that practice medicine in our country, by and large, remain magnificent. A generation or two ago through today remain magnificent, whether they're immigrants here or the people that are homegrown here. And we ultimately have a remarkable medical community in total, and we need more of them, quite frankly, given the
needs
of our population. We just need more. We need more nurses.
Yeah.
We need more clinicians. We need more everything. And that's one of the great problems in D.C. is so much focus is around so many things, but so little focus is about how do we actually improve and strengthen and support the healthcare workforce and grow it. You know, there's so much talk. The institutions recognize we need more medical schools, so institutions have agreed more medical schools, but we need more GME spots too. And not
well, that's the problem.
So,
yeah, that's the 100%. Problem. Is we don't. You know, there are no residency slots. You can graduate all the students you want, but if there's no place for them to work,
it's a debacle. You know. It's literally a debacle.
Yeah.
It's still very hard to get into medical school, but the real challenge is on the next side is getting a great resume.
Right.
Don, we've got to wrap up.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, hey, thanks for calling and contacting me. I always enjoy talking with you.
What a pleasure. Really a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.